Hi, this is Aaron Kupferberg for PowerPapaholic.com, reporting for the Rock and Roll Report, and I'm talking with Brian Ray today, a wonderful guitarist and solo artist, and also the guitar player for Paul McCartney's band. Brian, let me ask you a little bit about, you just finished, I guess, a tour with Paul recently?
Yeah, we just finished a big stadium tour in the U.S.
Great.
About 11 dates around the U.S. And it's a fabulous time, doing stadiums, some of United States' best baseball parks, including the new Citi Field.
Excellent.
The old Shea Stadium.
Yeah, and I saw that podcast on top of the Ed Sullivan Theater as well. That was wonderful.
Fun time, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was great. Let me start at the beginning a little bit. Let me go back a little bit and say, how did you end up getting selected by Paul for his touring band in 2002?
Well, yeah, it started about 7 years ago. On my birthday, 2002, Abe LaBoyle Jr., a very dear friend of mine, we had worked together in France with Johnny Halliday and Mylène Farmer, was at my birthday party, and I knew he had the Paul McCartney gig, and I simply asked him, when are you guys going to start touring? And he said, yeah, probably in about 6 weeks or so. And I said, wow, well, who's going to play bass? And then Paul moves to guitar. As we all know, he plays every instrument.
Right.
And who's going to play guitar when he's on bass, and who's going to play bass when he's on piano? And he said, well, actually, we're looking for somebody. We're looking for a guitar player who plays bass. And I put my hand in the air and I said, I'd love a shot at that. And it was that simple. He said, hey, that's a good idea. And I got a call about 2 weeks later with an invitation to meet with David Kahn, who was Paul's really talented producer from Driving Rain and all the live CDs and the last studio album, Memory Almost Full.
Oh, okay.
I got together with David Kahn, and it was really just a chat. I mean, he gave me a guitar to play, and he gave me a bass to play, and he just kind of watched my hands. He wasn't, counting off songs and things. He was just kind of, just hanging with me, really.
Oh, that's
right. After about an hour, he said, well, I have a really good feeling about this. I'm going to put your name forward. There are other names, but I'm going to put your name forward, and we'll see what happens. And I got a call the next day.
Oh, great.
On a plane to go to New Orleans to play one song with Paul McCartney for the Super Bowl 2002. And I, of course, was elated. And that's how it started.
Oh, excellent. I'm just curious, are you social with Paul after, a lot of the touring is finished, or is it just like all business with him?
No, it's very social, actually. After every show, we drive out of the stadium or the arena together and toast and talk, and we stay in the same hotels, and we often travel with him on a charter jet, and we hang a lot together.
Oh, okay, so it's you definitely have social time quite a bit with him.
Yeah, it's a real band.
Oh, great. I was just curious, do you have any competition? I know there's a few other guitarists there, namely another favorite of mine is Rusty Anderson. How do you work out who plays what? Is it something you do with Paul, or is it Paul's decision, or you guys all work among yourselves to figure it out?
About 90% of the time, it's intuitive with Rusty and I. We were given roles when we got the job.
Right.
And, his role happens to be lead guitar. Mine happens to be mostly rhythm guitar with some lead and bass and acoustic and 12-string. And of course, Paul plays guitar, bass, piano, acoustic, and all that. So it's pretty intuitive. You can listen to any one of Paul's tracks and say, well, this is what the lead guitar player does, and this is what the rhythm guitar player does. And we come prepared with that. Now, there are other instances where we say, hey, Brian, why don't you play lead on All My Love, and why don't you play lead on Get Back? Why don't you take solos on this or that song, and so we reverse the roles there. But pretty much it's intuitive, and Rusty and I will get together. Usually we'll have a few days to rehearse before Paul comes in as a band, as a four-piece. Okay. And Rusty and I will just work out details, and we'll continue working out details literally until the lights go down, you know.
Okay, great. Let me just move on a little bit past Paul McCartney, and I just want to tell you, I loved your last album, Mondo Magneto. It was just great, especially the song Vinyl that really hit a nerve with me. I love that song. I know you're planning a follow-up. Can you tell me a little bit about your second album that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Thanks so much, first of all, for listening to Mondo Magneto. I'm super proud of that. Great time making it, and you know, it's just a wonderful process to get together with the musicians that I really respect and adore, and who happen to be my best friends, guys like Abe Laboriel Jr. and Matt Logg and you know, Paul Bushnell and all these great players. Now, on this record, I've assembled some of the same guys, some of the usual suspects, and added a few more, the drummer from Elvis Costello, Pete Thomas, along with Davey from Elvis Costello's band, and a keyboard player named Adam McDougall. And he's terrific. He plays Black Crowes. We got together, much like the first album, and really worked on arrangements together as a four-piece, sometimes three-piece, but as a four-piece, getting the arrangements down and getting a lot of interplay between the musicians, because I have a strong feeling that that's something that's missing in a lot of pop now. You know, a lot of these pop songs that we hear are all constructed by one guy with a few guest players, you know.
Right.
It doesn't have that wonderful exchange that we all have come to know and love from all of our, you know, records that influenced us. So that's the deal. We're all, you know, in the studio at the same time, laughing and scratching and coming up with arrangements and grabbing our performances as a unit.
And what's the title of the album?
The title of the new album is This Way Up, and I'm looking forward to a January or February release. I'm probably about 60% done with it right now, and it's exciting. I'm loving it. It's, you know, there's more up-tempo numbers, I think, than the last record. Not that that matters, and lots of fun and lots of colors. You know?
Awesome, awesome. You think that you're, you know, because you've been playing with Paul for a while, that you're spoiled with all the attention you get when you go out on the road solo? That the, you know, maybe the crowds aren't as big, you think, or
what's wrong with playing with 29 people?
Nothing at all. In fact, I hear a lot of artists love that. They love the intimacy.
I do love it. I love playing for 60 people at a small club. It's really fun. It's a rush. To me, honestly, I don't get nervous playing in stadiums with all for 50,000 people. I just feel exhilarated and happy. It just makes me feel happy. But when I play my own gigs in front of 60 people, I'm very nervous before I go on. And, you know, I'm nervous until the second song or so is done, and then I feel like I'm okay. But it's a weird thing. It's that intimacy, and it's also when it's all about your lyrics and your voice, and you're the front guy, and everyone's looking at you. It's a very different thing. It was a lot easier when I had Etta James or you know, Paul McCartney to hide behind.
Right, and you just brought up my next question, which was great. Your time with music legend Etta James must have been amazing. Do you have a really memorable story from that period in your life?
Oh, yeah. I have so many stories. I mean, the first time I ever went to Europe was with Etta, and I was 19 years old, and we were having a band assembled for us by Claude Knobs, the guy who puts on the Montreux Jazz Festival, still to this day in Switzerland. And, you know, it was just Etta and her dysfunctional husband, Sam, and I traveling. And the band was being put together. Well, I get there, and the band is consisting of Rick Wakeman on keyboard, John Paul Jones on bass, and, you know, it's like David Fathead Noman and Tony Poindexter on horns, you know, and John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin on bass. And I go to rehearsal, and I'm just a kid, man. I didn't have charts. I didn't know what I needed to do. I knew the material, so I'm teaching the material sort of as I know it, and it's coming together well, and in walks J. Jimmy Page and Robert Plant.
Wow.
And they sat in on it. They listened to a couple of songs, and then Jimmy Page is looking at my guitar, and he goes, "I feel like I've known you before, man. Like maybe in another life."
Wow.
I'm having an Aleister Crowley, discussion with Jimmy Page, and then he said, "Why don't you come along to dinner?" And they took me out to dinner in a chalet up in the Alps of Montreux, Switzerland, and just events like that are just indelible in my mind, and being on stage and having Etta, tell me when we're going to go to the bridge, when we're going to go to the solo, when we're going to go to the outro, and you have to be ready because she could change her mind, and it would be different every time we played it. So, you'd get these great stories, or you'd be in front of a big audience in Montreux, Switzerland, and you'd have Led Zeppelin's bass player on bass, and you'd turn around, and I'd miss the cue, and she'd throw her wet towel in my face.
Great. So, relating to that, have you had, with Paul, have you had any recent embarrassing moments on stage that you couldn't talk about?
Oh, let me see. Embarrassing moments on stage. Well, anytime you make, you play a bad note or a wrong note, he's really nice because he's got great ears and he hears everything. But he's got, enough taste and class to not stare at you or make some kind of weird face at you, a skunk eye. He'll usually just act like he didn't hear a thing, and he's just cheering along and, smiling and singing along. And then a bar or two later, he'll look over at you, and he'll crack up as if he had done it, And he'll kind of laugh, and then he'll recover and finish the lyric, whatever he's singing.
That's great.
But that kind of thing is puts you at ease. Because you know what? We're a real live band. We don't put on taped vocals. We don't put on, we're not playing to a click. We're just real players playing through a real system and our real guitars and our real pianos and our real hands, And so it's a human experience, man. We've had to start songs over again because somebody messed up the intro.
And it probably was like no big deal either to anyone to just start all over again. It's not like...
It's hearing. It's endearing. People feel like they caught something very special.
All right, that's awesome. Awesome.
I could also add that if people want to reach me, they could certainly do that by joining my mailing list. And I promise never to spam, and we don't share information at all.
Okay, that's at brianray.com, right?
It's at brianray.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this interview, Brian. I really appreciate your time and that you could take talking with me. Best of luck, and I will be looking forward to that new album when that comes out.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sorry for the mix-up last week.
No problem. That was more me than you.
No problem.
All right, thanks. Take care then.
Okay, be well.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.